Thanks, Dave. The mic isn't working. Can everybody hear me okay? Great. Thumbs up back there. Okay. So I'm going to talk a lot about moving agriculture towards sustainability in the 21st century, but I'm going to tie it into resilience. I do a lot of research with sustainable ag, and I measure the impacts of farming systems, in agroecosystems, if you like, organic, conservation ag, integrated, conventional. And I look at their impacts not just on the soil, other environmental factors, but I look at the economics. I'm starting to look at the social area, and of course I look at production and quality of the product coming off that land. So I'm going to relate it mostly to sustainability, but then talk about how that might relate to resilience. And the big challenge we have, and we hear this, it's almost a daily theme that we hear, is, well, we have all these people now, about 7.3, 7.4 billion. We're going to be between 9 and 10 billion by 2050, and possibly 11 or 12 billion by the 21st century, where it'll finally level off. And how do we feed everybody, and how do we do it and protect the environment at the same time? That's and not to mention be profitable and look at social objectives too. We have concentrated the last 60 years looking mostly at yield, and we've done that pretty well. We've increased yields dramatically, especially in developed countries, and some of that has moved over into less developed countries, but we've also found that we have negative consequences on the environment. And you read this in all kinds of international reports. If you're in the United States, national reports, and I'm going to talk about a National Academy of Science study in particular, but FAO puts out reports, and there are other international reports that come out that talk about the same thing. And you know the litany of causes of some of our conventional systems, from overdrawn aquifers, eroded soils, degraded environments, prime farmland loss, et cetera, et cetera. And so because of that concern, we're now looking at other systems and have been over the last 20, 30 years. So in 2010, this report came out toward sustainable ag systems in the 21st century by the National Academy. And we defined, there were 15 of us on the committee, I was on the committee, it was made up of scientists, farmers, and industry people, and I found it's pretty interesting that we all agreed that we have these problems, and to move us in the right direction in the 21st century, we need to look at these more innovative systems. We also defined sustainable ag rather than just the three-legged stool of social, economic, and environmental objectives. We took production, because production, the yield of a crop or the quality of a crop or an animal, used to sit either in the economic or the social, and it was unclear where it sat, and so we took that out as a fourth goal. So the goals were, for a farm to be sustainable, you have to provide abundant, affordable food, fiber, fuel. You have to enhance the natural resource base and environment, make farming financially viable was the third, and then also contribute to the well-being of farmers in the community. It's a utopian concept, and I'm not really sure if there is a farm in the world that is truly sustainable, because we keep raising the bar on what farmers and growers need to do to meet sustainability. So at the same time, basically, we were doing our report, the Food and Ag Organization is pushing this concept of sustainable intensification. They're upping the ante. They're saying, well, we need to increase crop production, but we're also going to improve environment, economic, and social sustainability. We're not just going to make sure that we're providing yields of adequate quality. We're going to improve everything. And that really puts a lot of pressure on us. But regardless, with sustainable intensification, with sustainability, they still have those four areas in them. Okay, so that part is similar. So the National Academy of Sciences report, we did criticize conventional, FAO does the same, but we also identified innovative farming systems that exist now that are more sustainable, that are even more resilient, which is a little bit different, but they're not widespread. And I'm going to talk about those and give a good example of one of them in particular. And the report identified, well, we can do incremental changes or we can do transformative. And we probably need both, but the one that's going to get us to where we want to go by the end of the 21st century are the transformative changes and the transformative systems. So what are they? So the incremental approaches are practices and technologies that really address specific production and environmental concerns associated with mainstream conventional farming systems. So things like two-year crop rotations, not three, four, five-year crop rotations that are going to be more difficult to do. Precision ag, classically bred or genetically engineered crops, reduced or no-till. Those are all fine, but they're more incremental in their approach. And we want to continue those, but we want to do what we really need are more transformational or transformative changes. And the committee felt that to do that, we need transformative farming systems. And they identified farming systems that exist that are transformative. And then there are transformative innovative systems that we don't even know of. And these are just some of them. So I think most of you have heard of conservation ag. There's minimal conservation ag, which is probably just reduced tillage or no-till. But optimal conservation ag is really where you have 3 years of crop rotations or more, you no-till, not just reduce till, and you keep the ground covered all the time. It's difficult to do. And a lot of the people that are identified in the conservation ag movement, farmers and growers, usually do one or two of those. They don't do all three. I think we all know what organic systems are. Mixed crop livestock systems were also identified as being in that mix of transformative farming systems. Integrated probably is the area that can grow the most, and probably more farmers are in that area. They're recognized in Europe as integrated farming systems, IFS, and they're really a hybrid between organic and conventional. They're usually about 70% organic with about 30% practices from conventional. So an integrated farmer has the benefit of not just building the soil, adding organic amendments, but they can, if they need to put a side dress of fertilizer on, synthetic fertilizer, or apply pesticides, it's fine. And in Europe, there are places where you can get premiums for integrated farming systems food. You can go in the store and buy integrated apples, and you get those at a premium, say in Switzerland, or you can buy organic apples, and they're even at a higher cost. And they're also, both systems can be subsidized by the government. The common theme, I think, of all these systems that I'm showing, and there are others I'm not showing, is that they build the soil. That's a common theme. And as a soil scientist, by my training was originally in soil science, that pleases me because I think if you're doing that, you're at the start of moving toward sustainability. So I'm asked this question a lot. Well, have there been a lot of studies comparing these different systems with conventional to show that they are more sustainable or to show that they are more resilient? And the system that's probably the most contentious but probably the most widely studied is organic, believe it or not. So if we were to rewind back 30, 40 years ago, there were hardly any studies done. But now there's hundreds, I mean over 1,000 studies done comparing organic with conventional, not just yields, but the nutrition of the food, the effect on economics, the effect on the environment from nutrient pollution to erosion. And there have even been, they're hard to find, some social studies done. In fact, as I'll say later, the social study part is the area that we really need to do more work in. So I've chosen organic as kind of the example system. I'm just going to run through a few slides where I'm going to go through these four sustainability areas and just kind of show you what the research shows. It would have been a little bit more difficult. I probably could have done this with conservation ag, but it would be a little bit more difficult to do in the financial performance and social well-being area. So I chose organic. So in the yields area, it's true that organic crop yields are lower, from about 8 to 25%, and that's taken from, in other words, we've had enough studies done now that there are five review or meta-analysis studies that have been done looking at all the studies comparing organic and conventional. And what they come up with is yields are lower on a per acre basis or per hectare basis, and it ranges from 8 to 25%. And usually they come out about 10 to 15% lower is the more general theme. But they also found that if there are areas of drought, and we've had certain years with drought, because there's more organic matter in the organically farmed soils, they tend to respond better in yield, and they often can actually have higher yields in periods of drought. So if we're thinking of resilience, that's a plus. Even though their yields are lower, that's a minus. And we are having in certain areas, especially in dry farmed areas, periods of drought where that could be a benefit. And that would also apply to conservation agriculture where organic matter is being built. Part of this yield gap, some researchers have looked at breeding grain crops in organic systems, and they found when you actually breed the crops in those organic systems, they tend to produce higher yields than if those crops were originally bred in conventional systems. So that might be a way of lowering the yield gap. I don't know if organic yields will ever be the same as conventional. And with some crops, they're really close. And part of it is that with conventional, that is the main goal. We want to increase yields, whereas I think with organic and some of these other systems, we're looking at multiple sustainability goals. With crop and animal quality, we do know that there are little to no pesticide residues. There have been another number of meta-analyses that have looked at U.S. data, European data, thousands of data points on fruits and vegetables and other crops, and they conclude that if people are concerned about crop residues, then there's no question there are little or no pesticide residues on organic. So that would favor organic. And the jury's still out as far as the nutrition part, but the nutrition part is so contentious and so popular that there have been 15 meta-analyses done since the year 2000. So there's been over 100 studies done. Probably back in 2000 there were maybe 50, and now there's, I don't know, probably 150. So every year there's been a different meta-analysis that comes out. So then if you were to say, well, can you summarize the 15 meta-analysis, almost like a meta-analysis of the meta-analyses, 12 of those studies basically say that there's more nutrient-dense food with the organic systems. And usually it comes out where there's more vitamin C and more total antioxidant activity. Three of the studies show no differences. Neither one of those systems is better or worse. The bottom line is that if you look at yield and if you look at the quality of the food, organic farming produces adequate yields, sometimes high yields, and of good quality. So in that metric of production, it does okay. Environment, there have probably been about five or six meta-analyses done because there have been so many studies. And the benefits of organic ag, this is where organic shines compared to conventional. Greater soil carbon throughout the profile, less soil erosion. Now remember, we're comparing organic with conventional, not organic with no-till, not organic with conservation ag. These are typical conventional systems. Less soil erosion and less soil degradation on the organic system. We've also found that, and this really pertains to resilience, that organic systems are more energy efficient. They're almost always more energy efficient on a per hectare basis. When you go to a per product basis, some of that goes away. On a per product, meaning per yield basis, there are some cases where the conventional can actually do better. But in general, organic systems are more energy efficient. And then if you look at biodiversity, which is part of resilience too, the studies show that there's higher below and above ground biodiversity, and there's also lower pesticide and nutrient pollution with organic systems than with conventional systems. If we move to the economic performance area, there's just been one meta-analysis done. It was just done this year. In fact, I was an author on that study where my colleague, David Crowder, and his name is on this paper too, we looked at, over the last 40 years, all the studies that have been done comparing organic with conventional as far as economic performance goes. And what we found is that after transition, that transition period, that three-year transition period, it can be difficult because in that transition period, say a conventional grower's moving into the organic area, all of a sudden they're shifting their whole system. They don't have the arsenal of synthetic pesticides and fertilizers that they had before. Their yields usually drop and they don't get the premium. And that premium can be significant, but once they climb out of that transition period and they get the premium, they do fairly well. And so what we found is, whether you look at benefit-cost ratios or net present values, organic systems are more profitable, 22 to 35% greater net present values, so basically net returns. And it's for two reasons. One is they're getting good enough yields, even though they're lower, and they get a price premium. And if you were to say, well, okay, what's the price premium that they're getting? It averages about 30%. It's usually between, anywhere from 27 to 32, 33%. That's the price premium that the farmer or grower is getting at the farm gate. It's not the price premium that we pay when we go to the store and buy oranges and apples. That's a separate premium, okay? We also found that total costs were not different. They were the same. The difference within those costs is labor costs are more expensive on the organic system, but fertilizer and pesticide costs are more expensive with conventional growers. These profits don't account for negative externalities like water pollution, erosion, and they don't count for providing ecosystem services. There have been probably a handful of studies, and I mean four or five, that have actually compared organic and conventional system for ecosystem services like soil mineralization, biological pest control. And when those studies have been done and they've put a dollar value on the benefits of biological pest control, organic farming comes out significantly ahead. And the meta-analysis did not take that into account. Social well-being is an area that we have a long way to go. And I'll just summarize it. I was at a conference this was 15 years ago, I was with a bunch of wine grape growers. And they were all talking about how great they were. They were either integrated organic, they were making good money, and they were talking about how environmental and economically sustainable they were. And one of them got up and said, I just have one question. How many of you have a 401k plan for your workers? And the whole room went silent. It was like, how many of you are really taking care of your workers? And I was in the room and I thought, wow, that's amazing. We're talking about social well-being, and that's the hardest area of the four, I think, for growers. How do you take care of your workers? How are you doing that? And what you're doing, is it good for the community? There have been about three or four or five studies that have shown that there is greater employment, and this is both in less developed and developed countries. More employment for farm workers, which can be good, especially in less developed countries where employment unemployment rates are high. These studies do show more cooperation among farmers with organic systems. Because of CSAs and because of farmers markets and just the whole thing with local foods, there's better interactions between farmers and consumers with organic and locally produced foods. However you feel about animals, there is a thing where animals get out more on grass-fed systems with organic than conventional. So it's starting to kind of lean toward or favoring organic with social, but we really have a long way to go. We need more studies in all systems looking at the social sustainability part. So one of the things that I found when I was on this committee is that we all thought that no one farming system is going to do it. You know, you go to these, you go to meetings, and some people will get up and they'll say, well, organic farming can't feed the world. They're right. Conventional farming can't sustainably feed the world either. We need a blend of farming systems. And so to safely feed the planet, we felt that a blend of these more innovative systems are the way to go because they address multiple sustainability goals. And they're likely to be more resilient because of that. And we also found that these systems exist. They're not widespread, but they're gaining ground. So, for example, conservation ag, probably they basically say the figures on it from FAO are about 8% of the world's farmers are conservation ag farmers. And I think it would be cut in half if you look at those that are actually practicing optimal conservation ag. In the U.S., we know that the food and beverage market with organic, for example, is almost at 5%. So 5% of the total food and beverage market now is almost 5% is organic, when, say, back in 1998, it was 0.8%. So that's growing. Conservation ag is growing. Integrated farming systems are growing in Europe. So we have these systems, but they're not widespread. They're gaining ground slowly. And what we found is what hinders their growth are market structures, policy incentives, and how science information or scientific information is distributed. So I'm just showing this picture, and you can look at it two ways. This is what growers face. So if you're the farmer, you're in the middle. And you're thinking, okay, I really want to do this, but oh, wait a minute. I'm affected if you're in the United States. I'm affected by the Farm Bill. I'm affected by local and regional policies. I'm affected by, well, what markets are available for my product? Gee, I really want to be organic, but I can't sell organic whatever because I don't have a market for it. Whereas somebody else somewhere else could, another grower could do that. Could I actually grow a value-added trait product? What access do I have to scientific information? Am I getting most of my information from an extension agent or a natural resource conservation service soil conservationist, or am I getting it more from a fertilizer and pesticide salesperson? It could be different information. When I look at this, it's interesting. I've shown this slide to growers, and I look at it like, oh my goodness, it would just be so hard to be a farmer. And I had a farmer come up to me and say, wow, that is so cool, that picture. It really shows what we have available to us. Like, and I said, wow, you're looking at it glass half full, and I've been looking at it glass half empty for years. It's like, thank you very much. So he said, can I get a copy of that slide? He was so excited by that, wow, we have all these great choices. And I was saying, wow, you have all these things that are pressing you. So back to the population thing. It's growing. It's going to hit probably 9 billion, maybe 10 by 2050. That's an issue. Consumers need to take responsibility for what they eat and how much they eat. You think about agriculture, how we feed the world. 7.3 billion people, that's the population. Why is it that we have 800 million malnourished people in the world? 800 million, but at the same time, we have 1.9 billion, so more than twice that, that are overweight and obese. Of that, 600 million are obese. So obviously we produce enough calories. In fact, per capita in the world, we produce about 2,800 kilocalories per capita, when we only eat about 2,100 to 2,300, and that includes the 30 to 40 food waste taken out. So we produce more than enough. And in the United States, people are copying our food systems. Why is it in the United States that 69% of adults 20 years and older are overweight or obese? If our system is so good, there's a disconnect. I realize there's a lot of reasons. So we can do better. So consumers have a responsibility too. There is a lot of power going on here. There are agrochemical companies, big money involved. That's changed the landscape. There's no question. That plays a big role in our food system. There's also a food movement that's kind of cool. We have more farmers markets, more CSAs. People want more local food. And you can see that with the co-ops that are being you know, that are sprouting up, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, all these places that are that people are supporting. Market structures. A big factor there, I can see, what do I have, about 5 minutes? And that for some farmers, the markets are increasingly concentrated, so that affects farmers' decisions on what they're going to produce. And I mentioned before, at the same time, consumer demand is growing for more sustainability brand products. And what I mean by that, it's not just organic. We have integrated farming systems in Europe. In our area of the Palouse in Washington, it's mostly conventional and no-till. We have some no-till growers that have gotten together, and they produce wheat that they call shepherd's grain. And they're certified by a third-party certifier, the Food Alliance, and they have to meet certain environmental requirements and social requirements to be certified, and they sell their grain in the co-ops, not just in our town, but also in all the Whole Foods stores in Seattle and in Oregon, and on the Seattle side in Washington, and also throughout Oregon, they sell Food Alliance products, and I buy their products. I want to support these farmers. More and more of these value-added groups are popping up. Policy incentives are huge. I mentioned the Farm Bill in the United States. In Europe, they still subsidize mainstream crops. So couldn't direct and indirect crop subsidies, couldn't they go more toward agro-environmental incentives? Couldn't they go toward more biodiversity protection and soil conservation? In less developed countries, the issues are more rural infrastructure. And also subsidizing both the combination of mineral fertilizer with organic nutrient inputs. The combination of the two really works well. We need that. That's where subsidies could actually benefit in less developed countries. I mentioned before that our science isn't evenly distributed, and it's our science today is still more focused on productivity and efficiency. It's not focused on the systems approach, and I'm sure most of you in the room have heard this, that we need to start looking at farming systems. Farming systems or agroecosystems, we need to look at their effects on sustainability and their effects on resilience. And with that, this is my last slide. This picture was taken by a colleague about 20 years ago, it was in southern Minnesota. These are both from corn soybean farms. And the slide on your left, you can see the corn roots. These were two farms side by side. And he took a spade full of soil from the two farms. The farm on the left is basically corn, 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 or corn soybean, straight conventional. The farm on the right was integrated, was corn, soybean, and then 2 years of alfalfa. Pesticides and some fertilizers were used, but they were relatively low. Took a hose and with medium pressure ran it over the two samples. Within a minute, all the soil was gone on the soil sample on the left. On the right, because of the higher organic matter content, the better soil tilt, the soil stayed in place. It was more resilient. These innovative, transformative systems that I'm talking about, they're doing more what's on the right. That's what I want to do. Thank you.
We do have time for a question, so I'd entertain any questions from the audience. Yes, sir.
John, thanks.
Sure.
Much of the population growth is going to happen in the next 20 years, 30 years, going to be in middle-income countries and less-income countries. And that's where the land is not available. Talk about Asia, for example.
Or sub-Saharan Africa.
Or sub-Saharan Africa, land is available. But Asia, land is not available.
Right. Well, but that's just one system. Integrated farming is possible, and actually in South Asia, this is interesting, in India has the highest number, because they're smallholder farmers, of organic farmers in the world. I think that's right. We saw that. I just pointed to one of my grad students, so I have to get their approval. I get all my information from my grad students. I really don't know anything. And he nodded. And from Dave, he nodded approval. I said, "Is that?" I looked at him. He nodded approval. So that's not necessarily true. But what I personally think is, I don't just look at, "Oh, okay, we want to go to organic." I want farmers to move into these innovated areas, and probably for a lot of them, the easiest is the integrated. But for a lot of the farmers, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, where they have land but they don't have resources, the soils are so poor, and part of it's been from farming practices, but part of it's an old landscape. And they need the combination of mineral fertilizers with organic inputs. It's that combo that works so well. But the problem is they can't afford it. You talk to a farmer there to use a normal amount of fertilizer, it could be a quarter of their salary for the year. So when you talk about South Asia, I think different systems of these innovative ones that I've shown, I think they actually could work in India. And we're fooling ourselves if we just say, well, let's just produce yield at the expense of the other sustainability goals, because you drag those other ones down and you only can do that for a certain period of time. I'll give you an example about sub-Saharan Africa. Population will double there. It's almost at a billion. It's probably about 900 million now. It'll probably be close to 2 billion by 2050. So, and in South Asia, population's going to increase dramatically. So those are key areas. One of the things about sub-Saharan Africa, in fact, if you look at the whole African continent, for those of you who are soil scientists, less than 1% of the African continent has mollisols, those dark, brown, black, wonderful soils, prairie soils. We have in the United States 22 to 23% of our landscape is mollisols. We have more mollisols, more area and a higher percent than any other country. It's not even fair. We have the soil. And it's not that you have to have mollisols to grow crops, but our soils are just starting there. It makes those soils more resilient. Anything else? One more question?
No.
No more questions?
John is going to be here all day today.
Oh, I can't talk? I was going to answer questions, Dave.